All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Hey everybody, welcome to a special edition of our podcast. I'm Jason. This is The Walking Dead Cast, episode 76. I'm really stoked to be able to interview Nicole Beatty. Nicole is the writer of this week's episode of The Walking Dead, Sick. And it's the first time that we've interviewed a writer of the show, aside from showrunner Glenn Mazzara and Kirk, a brief interview with Kirkman last year. But I talked with Nicole this morning. We had a great talk for about half an hour, and I think you're going to like it. At one point, I mentioned this photo of Nicole in the New York Times, and I didn't really elaborate. But if you heard our previous episode, you know that I was talking about it's the writer's room of The Walking Dead, and you see Nicole with her head down on the table, and it looks like she's, you know, struggling over a story point or something. So I thought it would be interesting to find out what that was all about. All right, so stick around and I'll be right back with Nicole.
Oh, how old is your baby?
He's one.
So was he out? He's out on a walk in a stroller?
Yeah, and well, yeah, I don't know. I just push him outside usually.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
So, shall we get started? Have you done interviews like this before?
You mean a podcast?
Uh-huh.
No, I don't even understand what podcasts are. I don't understand what a lot of things are. So
I mean, you and I were tweeting, and you wanted to get on the phone, and you're sort of like, you know, I'm not totally versed in this whole Twitter thing yet, and I would rather just have an adult conversation, which I thought was kind of refreshing, and it made me wonder if you brought some of that sensibility to The Walking Dead, like, because The Walking Dead is such a, I mean, our whole culture is this whole geek culture now, and it's just a proliferation of fanboys and everything, and you can almost say that we're not as adult as we used to be.
Right.
So
most people, when they do these, they do it over Twitter?
No, no, but I'm just saying that I thought it was cool.
I understand when I emailed you and said, can we talk on the phone? Oh,
because, yeah.
Right. Okay. I don't even understand Twitter. So I just got Twitter because I had Twitter when everyone got it, but I never used it. It just laid dormant. And then when I went to The Walking Dead, it was a huge, everything about being on that show, the culture of that show, everything was shocking for me because, first and foremost, I think, you know, I told Glenn this yesterday when we got the numbers for the episode, for the ratings, yeah. And I said, I think if you put together all the shows I've ever been on, I don't think that many people watched one episode of The Walking Dead. And I've worked on 5 shows before this, and I love every one of the shows I've worked on, but they're little, except with the exception of Sons of Anarchy, they're all little baby shows that nobody ever watched. So I don't have any experience with people watching anything. We just do it, and there's a little group of people that watch it, and then we forget about it, and then they cancel the show. And
it's a big phenomenon.
That was the biggest thing, and it was already big when I came on the show last. You know, I came on for this third season, so I mean, these numbers are gigantic, but they were already gigantic last year. These are just double gigantic numbers, but even more, it is a show that becomes your whole life. Like, it's your whole world becomes The Walking Dead, because the fans of the show are like fans of, they're the most passionate, intense fans of any show. They have to be.
Have you had much contact with the fans yet?
Well, they have. So that's the Twitter thing. They follow me and the other, you know, all the writers on Twitter. They know who we are, right. You know, and we're just nerdy writers. And so people don't typically, they usually care about the showrunner of a show, if they even know to care about that.
Right. Or the actors mostly, right?
Or the actors. Yeah. But yeah, they always care about the actors. But sometimes, you know, they'll care about, like, Kurt Sutter, you know, people love, they know Kurt, Sons of Anarchy is Kurt Sutter's show. Mm-hmm. I worked for Dave and Milch on two shows, and people are pretty, pretty passionate about Dave and Milch.
Is that Rubicon?
No, I worked for Dave and Milch on Deadwood and John from Cincinnati.
Oh, okay.
And then, and Rubicon was created by a guy named Jason Horwich, who's a really beautiful writer who left the show during the middle of the season, and, but we didn't, nobody watched Rubicon, so nobody tweeted about it or cared about it. There was no online culture of Rubicon. But so this was a real, and I'm also not, I don't say this with pride or without pride or any emotion attached to it, but I'm not a genre writer per se. So this isn't, the first graphic novel that I ever read was Robert Kirkman's The Walking Dead, and which I love so much. I'm very passionate about the book.
Have you read all up to the caught up?
I haven't. I'm almost there. I haven't read all of them. I'm almost there. Uh-huh. But I've read a lot of them, and I love the book so much, and I also love Robert Kirkman so much, and
I
adore him. Yeah. He's hilarious, and he, you know, I said this to Scott Gimple yesterday. He might be one of my top three favorite people I've ever worked with.
Right on. Is
Robert Kirkman. Scott Gimple might be the other one, but coming to this material for me was I didn't necessarily come to it as a lover of zombies or horror or any of that. Not a hater of it, but just it's not my interest, you know.
Right.
And I think that Glenn and I would differ in, you know, I know he feels strongly that this is a horror show, and I feel like it's a family drama.
Right. This show, I think, is almost kind of unique because, have you seen True Blood?
No, I don't watch it.
Okay, so
I know what it is. I've seen a couple episodes of it. So.
It's really campy, right? And it's gory.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
But Walking Dead is a weird combination of this, like, it is campy in a way, the gore and just getting a thrill out of seeing a zombie's skull caved in. But then there's this earnest emotional character drama that you're kind of speaking to, I think, and it combines them so well.
I think it does a good job of servicing both things, of servicing the horror. And, you know, people love to be scared, and I'm not a person that loves to be scared. I find the show very scary.
Uh-huh.
The first time when I went to Georgia to shoot episode two, and I was on the set while they were shooting the premiere episode, and the first time I saw zombies on the set,
yeah,
I was so scared, and I still get really scared when I'm around them because I don't want to sound like a silly, stupid girl, but it's really scary.
It's
and watching the show scares me. It is a really scary show. And I think Billy Gearhart, who directed episode two, is a great director of scary stuff. It is much scarier for my taste, but I was already a fan of the show before I came to work on it, though. So I already was signing myself up to get scared every week. But
so you forced yourself to watch it, even though you're a bit squeamish about those kind of things?
Yeah, because I liked it. The thing I think that Glenn really, really tapped into and has been doing so well is he knows how much people, despite themselves, like to be scared. And I think he knows how to do it really well.
Sure.
And I would, you know, if it were my show, I'd have like five people watching, because I would just be writing really long, drawn out character scenes, you know, people saying nothing.
I mean, this episode, I have to tell you, is in some ways your episode, this week's episode called Sick, which was extremely sick. And it was probably in some ways the most disturbing episode yet.
It was, well, see, you say that because you don't know what's going to come. I say that going,
so
just
far, so
wait
far
for the rest of the season.
Oh, boy. You know,
this is,
I mean,
a slow start.
One reason why I say this is because, you know, we're so used to all this zombie gore that it kind of desensitizes us. And now we can see Rick burying a pickaxe or whatever in a live human's head. And we haven't seen that. I mean, I don't know if we've ever seen that on TV before.
Right. Yeah, that was an intense moment, and that was an intense decision for Rick to make, and I think an important one, too.
Yeah.
And I think it is the, you know, Ricktatorship, you know, it's part of...
I was fully behind it. I mean, okay, so this leads to another thing. I wonder, I mean, the thing about Walking Dead so far is it just causes all these like arguments, especially with our listeners. Some of the more, my co-host Karen and I are a little more kind of lefties, and some of our listeners are a little more cutthroat. So we argue like about Shane, whether he's right or not. This episode, when Rick did that, both Karen and I were on his side. But I wonder, like in the writer's room, do you have some of you guys are a little more cutthroat and some are a little more humane? Do you argue back and forth about morals and philosophy and stuff?
I think that that's an interesting, because I was going to try to make a generalization and say that Angela King and I tend to err on the more conservative side, but that's not really true. We definitely argue, but I can't make a generalization about who argues what, because I sometimes go for more and Glenn will pull me back, but not, it's just kind of different. It sort of depends on what the story is, but I think that Glenn would say he's surprised sometimes at how much that I want to go for more than what, we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And, but Glenn is really, I don't know. It's hard to answer that because we're all very different writers. And, you know, I would say that Scott Gimple is somebody who likes to pull it back a lot, you know, mm-hmm. not pull it back in a very eloquent way, you know, but I don't know. I think we're all very different and we all come to the table with such a different approach to this show.
Mm-hmm.
Not that we have a different approach, but we all have very, unique sensibilities.
Sure. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's all. So it's kind of hard to say. It really depends on what it is that where we stand on it. But I would say that you'd probably be surprised at how the two women on the show what we end up pushing for.
Yeah. Yeah. I might not be that surprised, but I hear what you're saying. And I'm guessing that a lot of that comes from you not wanting to just have the characters do what you would do, but trying to really get into their heads and be them. Right.
Yeah. And I think that, I mean, typically I do think that men have a different, that men behave different physically and with violence and,
mm-hmm.
you know, I just, that's just the difference between men and women, you know, where I was like, can't we just get along?
Yeah.
Can't we just all have a time out and right. talk it out and make better choices with our words?
I went through writing school and, that was the hardest thing for me is to have my characters in conflict. I just wanted everything to be okay, which is super boring.
But if you grew up in an alcoholic household, like I did, then you want everybody to just finally get along.
Yeah. So is it painful for you to just say, no, I have to put these characters in perilous positions and have them at each other's throats and stuff?
Well, it's uncomfortable. I think that it's uncomfortable writing these scripts. It is very, very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the most discomfort I've ever had writing a script was when I wrote episode 10 of this season as well, which was not as challenging for me as writing this episode. This was really, really tough. And
what was the hardest part?
It was really tough trying to figure out it was tough breaking the story and figuring out Rick living with the prisoners and all, because there had to be so much conflict in every scene. It had to be really tense. And that's really hard. It's hard to live into that tension all the time and to make the stakes so that it's not just tense with no consequence, that it's that, you know, somebody dies, somebody had to die, and to write that tension one of the struggles with this script was figuring out, what that tension looked like between the prisoners and Rick and what those scenes look like and how tense they were going to be and how to do it. We struggled with really bringing it up to where it ended up being. And, it was tough. And it was just tough for me writing my first Walking Dead script. Was I felt the craziest I've ever felt writing. I felt writing like living into this world in general,
yes.
Just abandoning myself to this material because it's not fun. It's really ugly. It's really dark and
depressing.
Oh my God, it's so depressing. And if you really just sort of surrender to it and you really live into this world, because you have to believe this world is real to write it. You can't write it from a silly place like there are no zombies.
Yeah.
Like, you really have to believe that this is the world that you're living in. I really was uncomfortable and I was really uncomfortable and my home life was not pleasant when
I was
man.
See,
you know what I mean?
Sounds like a blessing and a curse. Like it's such a cool job and yet it's almost torturous.
Yeah. It's really awesome when you're done writing for the season, which I am.
Oh,
I feel like I'm on top of the world now because
nice.
I wrote my two episodes and now I'm still working, but I'm not responsible for another script.
You're still breaking more stories.
Yeah, well, we're writing. We have them broken, but we're writing the finale. Well, Glenn's writing the finale, but we kind of all show up to the office to support that process for him.
Well, I mean, we loved the episode. If you have a minute, you should listen to the podcast that we just published. We talk all about it. I don't know if you care to hear that kind of stuff, but we loved it.
No, I do. I love it. I was Scott Gimple was telling me about your podcast. Have you ever interviewed Scott Gimple?
Not yet, but I'd love to. Yeah.
He's the best.
And cool.
He's really, really, really brilliant and funny. And
I heard him on Nerdist. Yeah. And I could hear that, what you were saying about him being a little more gentle maybe or something with the characters. Or being more tuned into humanity.
Yeah, he really cares about humanity. He cares about nuance, and he's just a really special guy and a special writer.
Nice.
And you would really enjoy him. And but yeah, I don't even know how to listen to a podcast. I don't even know where to go.
I'll tell you. I'll teach you. But I just wanted to let you know with the prisoners. Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a fan of the comic too, and I was excited that you guys did really amp up the tension, because in the comic they just go in and they're like, hey, what's up? Oh, hey, and that's pretty much it. I mean, there's more than that, but I really felt more like from the very first second here, the tension was amped, and it was just such an intense episode. It was a lot of fun to watch. I couldn't, you know, I couldn't take my eyes off of it.
Oh, so, I'm glad.
Good job.
I'm glad. Yeah, it was, I'm glad. Yeah. Cause I think that there was some differences obviously between the book and real life, this real life situation and what would really happen if this group of people, because in the, I can't differentiate between the two, but I don't think that the arrival into the cafeteria was as dramatic as our people's arrival into the cafeteria. And I think that it's pretty startling and upsetting to see a group of people amputate somebody's leg in the room you've been living in for 10 months or however long they've been in there.
And then take off and just leave it there.
Right. And like barrel into your kitchen, steal a cart and then leave. And I said, but they had, I don't want to talk about any of the future prisoner stuff because there's still some left.
Spoilers. Yeah. I know. I mean, God, I really want to know if some of the stuff in the comic's going to play out, but I'm not even going to bother asking you about that stuff. So let's change the subject. I just wonder, do you feel more of an affinity or more of a connection with certain characters?
I this sounds really silly, but I do love all the characters on the show. I you know, one of the characters who I love so much, and I'm only laughing because she doesn't get enough stuff to do, is Beth. I love mm-hmm. Beth because she's such a great actor.
Yeah.
And I love her, but I'm trying to, and she's a beautiful singer as well. I've really, I love them all. I really do. I love, you know, I have a special, huge place in my heart for Merle.
Yeah.
And now I can, you know, everybody knows that Merle's on the show again. Sir. And I love writing Merle. I do. I really love writing his character. And,
that's cool.
And I just think he's such an interesting guy. I've had all of them now. I've written for all of them, and they're all really special characters. I don't want to pick one, but I do love Merle.
Yeah, I know.
He's such a dick, you know.
Yes.
He's such a dick, and he's so brazen. But there's a method to his madness, and so.
We haven't seen that yet, so we're totally looking forward to how Merle affects Daryl and also T-Dog. And I have a theory that, you know, one of the reasons why you guys have kept T-Dog around so long is to see what will happen when he meets Merle again. But I'm looking forward to that. Yeah. So I'm glad to hear you say
should.
That.
Yeah. He's back. And I mean, but you know, Merle, you know the basis of who Merle is.
Yeah. He's a alpha male dickhead.
Racist, you know?
Yeah.
And
funny.
Yeah, but he's different. Things have changed. You'll see.
Okay.
That's the Sunday that he comes back.
Stoked.
Mm-hmm.
And then just going back a little, you know, we were talking about how depressing it is and intense. But I think it seems like you did your best to find some light moments. Like even when Rick, this was one of my favorite moments when Rick said, Lori said, what are your options for the prisoners? Uh-huh. And he said, kill him. And she said, I fully support that. And he said, yeah, you say that now.
I was
laughing. Did you think that would get a laugh?
I didn't think it would get a laugh, but I thought I hoped it would get a reaction. And I knew it wasn't. I knew it was subtle, but I hoped that it would get a reaction because she did say that to him. She whispered that in his ear, you know?
Yes.
And then she turned on him after he did that. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm glad it got a reaction. I wanted it to get some reaction.
Is that the biggest reason? I don't know if you can answer this, but why he's so upset with her now? Because she just turned on him in that moment in the finale and didn't support him when he needed it most?
I think that over the past 7 months, it's just gotten worse. And I think it's all of it. And I think that was sort of the final, you know, I think that he, as a man, I felt like he was really enduring a lot. Like, this baby might not be mine. You're fucking my best friend. Mm-hmm.
And you're kind of pitting us against each other.
Right, and then I killed him, and then you told me I was an asshole for doing that in a kind of a public way, and so I'm not. Things are tense between us, and which I would imagine, you know, it would. I think that if he came back loving her up and things being great, I don't know that anybody would buy that.
No, I was. The fans had a strong reaction to Lori last season, and I was wondering if you guys might have even been influenced by that and decided to play it up a little more because of that.
I can't speak for that. That would be a Glenn question, but I think that I think that the way that I felt about that character was this is a man who we are putting in he's a leader. He's a man in a real alpha male role. He can't be a sucker. He can't, you know, nobody wants to see Rick getting along with Lori and being okay with what's gone on between them, because I think the tricky thing for us was that there was a time lapse between seasons.
Yeah.
And
yes.
So
and how much emotional ground had been covered between that time. Right.
And we didn't cheat anything, but we had to account for relationships and things that had happened over the winter in a way that the audience would still understand with the time lapse and it was a weather change and, you know, so that was a tricky thing for us to pass time in a way emotionally and physically that people would understand.
So I have just a few more questions. Do you have a couple more minutes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I hope you can answer this one. When Rick and Daryl are hunting in the first episode and they come upon the prison, is mm-hmm. that the first time Rick has seen it? Or did they
yes.
just, it is the first time. Okay.
I can't answer that. It is the first time. That is him seeing it. The idea was that they missed it all winter.
Okay.
Because, he doesn't know it's there. Uh-huh. We knew it was there at the end of the season. The audience knew it was there, but they didn't see the prison.
Right. So they just happened to go the other way.
Yeah, because the herds, Glenn has a more eloquent answer for this, okay. and I wouldn't be able to answer the way he would, but it has to do with the herds sort of keeping them from there, uh-huh. Because they've been trying to stay ahead of herds.
Got it. Yeah, that was made pretty clear, so it's good.
So, but he can explain it in a way that I can't, but okay. I know that it made sense to me, you know, that...
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense to me. It was a little bit like, oh, it was right there and they didn't find it, but you know, mm-hmm. they wouldn't necessarily find it. So that's what I want to know. Cause I wondered if maybe they'd been past it a few times and just thought, oh, no way, we can't get in there. But now they were so desperate that they decided to give it a shot. But now you answered it. So thanks.
Yeah. I think that he never saw it.
Okay,
until
cool.
Then.
And then, I don't know if you can answer this either, but can you tell us whether or not Randall from last season was a bad guy?
That would really be a Glenn
question.
Evan Riley question.
Okay.
Because I wasn't there for that, and I don't want to answer the stuff that they talked about in the room when I wasn't there.
Okay, cool. Okay, so we saw this picture of you in the New York Times.
Mm-hmm.
what's going on in there?
Well, it's funny because... I think I was actually just putting my hair up in a bun when he took that picture, but it is a very accurate depiction of what, especially the second half of our season, the way we break it, because the first half of the season when we're breaking it is great because we're going to wrap in November and be back in the room in January. It's the shortest turnaround in television writers' rooms.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a 4 month lead time.
Oh
so when
gosh.
We're breaking, it's fun and ideas are flowing and anything is possible. We're all there. The big difference is that all the writers are in the room for that time.
Mm-hmm.
And now in the second half of the season, we are not there. Nobody is, it's so hard to get even three writers in the room at one time to work on stories. So it gets, that it was we were breaking episode, we were working on episode 15, I believe it was 15 on that day. It's just, it's really hard. It's really frustrating. And it's just a really hard show to break. There's so many things to account for in every episode. Number one, just the characters alone. There's so many characters.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many different parts of the show to service. There is the horror to service, the zombies to service, the character stuff to service. It's just, it's a lot. It doesn't break itself. It
right.
really isn't one that just sort of comes alive on its own.
Yeah. It's like this whole recipe and you have to make sure you have all the ingredients in there.
Without trying too, because you kind of want to know all that and then forget about all of it and just try to be really, you know, organic in the way that you come to the stories and then go back and try to figure the stuff out. But it's frustrating.
I mean, we're so happy right now. We love the show, obviously, but we had some complaints last season and it looks like they're completely taken care of now. And I'm happy that you're not totally versed in that. You're not like a big genre fan because you can bring a different, you know, more artistic sensibility to it. So we're stoked. A couple more things. So what's the worst mistake to make around a zombie?
To have your back to them.
Okay. And what would you do if you were stuck in the zombie apocalypse?
Well, I would think I would live on a boat.
Okay. Like a big yacht or something.
Well, no, I'm not that fancy. just a boat with a bathroom. Just a boat with a bathroom and a little refrigerator. But I always go, why aren't we on a boat? Let's just get on a cruise ship and get the hell out of here. But yeah, I think once you turn your back to them, you're screwed.
And the last thing, our one rule is everybody that comes on does a zombie sound.
don't make me do that.
Do you want to hear? You can hear. I'll let you hear some other. Like we have Nicotero, Mazzara, Kirkman.
Well, Nicotero is
the king. Here's a great
zombie. Do I really have to do it?
Well, yeah. I can't publish the interview unless you.
You didn't tell me this when you asked me to do this. But, God, I'm not really not good at this. Hold on. I have to think about the zombies for a second.
How about if I count to three and we do it together?
Do you have to do this to everybody to make them do the...
No. A little goading sometimes, but...
I'm the most...
You're very shy.
You have no idea. That's why my head is down in that stupid picture, too, by the way.
Because of the cameras?
Yes, they made me so uncomfortable.
I'll do one. Here it goes.
That's not even a good zombie. Nelly.
Okay, can you do better?
That's not even a Walking Dead zombie.
Let's do it.
They're like this. Oh, they're like.
There you go. Done. Oh, I'm so glad you did that, Nicole.
Okay, you're right. Felt a little abusive, like you were telling me that I would feel better, but really, actually shouldn't have ever had to do it, but it's over. It's over.
Thanks a lot, man. That was awesome. I enjoyed talking to you. It was a great episode.
Okay, thanks. All right. It was really nice to meet you and talk to you.
You too. Totally looking forward to the rest of the season.
Okay, awesome.
Take care.
All right. You too. Bye. It's over.
Admit it, you're sick of health insurance. You pay your part only to be denied. You don't need a better way. You need an alternative. Enter CrowdHealth. Instead of paying big insurance companies, you get access to telemedicine visits, discounted prescriptions, and more through crowdfunding. If you're sick of health insurance, try CrowdHealth. Get started today for just $99 per month for your first 3 months with code OPTOUT at joincrowdhealth.com. CrowdHealth is not insurance. Learn more at joincrowdhealth.com and use code OPTOUT.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to fling your favorite fishing rod around. And here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance covers your boat and your belongings. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to high-five someone. But not while you're holding your fishing rod. That's a prized possession. So hold on tight with both hands and keep it covered through boat insurance. Get more with GEICO.